Good evening, and welcome to another episode of Nigeria Politics Weekly. As usual, my name is Michael, and co-hosting with me is Phoenix. Today, we're going to be discussing three topics. The first is the supplementary budget submitted to the legislature by President Bola Ahmed Tinubu. Secondly, we'll discuss the political battle in River State between former Governor Yemi Osinbajo, who happens to be the Minister for the Federal Capital Territory, and his successor, Mr. Simelaye Fubara. Apologies if I've just mispronounced his name, but he's the current Governor of River State, and there's been a battle between the two characters this week. And last but not the least, we'll discuss the FBI's preliminary release of any data it possesses relating to Bola Ahmed Tinubu. So, Phoenix, to the first topic, the supplementary budget submitted to the legislature by President Bola Tinubu. I gather that the amount is 2.17 trillion naira, and it has generated a lot of controversy. But before we start, there's one thing we need to pin down, Phoenix, because the past few days I've heard all kinds of pronunciations for the same item on this budget. So I thought, since seen as you've attended the most expensive English schools in the world, you could perhaps help us with this problem. So there was this boat, that presidential boat that Bola Ahmed Tinubu requested payment for in this budget. Now, Nigerians have decided to call it, the spelling is YACHT. I've heard some people call it a yacht. Some people have called it a yacht. Some have said it's a yacht. And someone actually called it nyash. So, what exactly, how do you pronounce this word, Phoenix? What is the correct pronunciation for YACHT?
Hi, Michael. First of all, first of all, this idea that I've been to certain schools, don't let people come and be dragging me, I beg. Hello, Michael, and hello, listeners. As far as I know, pronunciation has always been yacht. But I don't say the Nigeria. You have to let Nigerians pronounce it the way they like because I think the anger is very plenty on top of this matter. So I think let people pronounce it the way they like. I saw your tweet and I couldn't help laugh because it very clearly expressed the dilemma around this matter because. As with everything with this particular government, there's always one new story from one new quarter. Nothing is ever as it seems. Nothing ever has a very straightforward explanation. One moment they're telling us that it's supposed to be a presidential yacht. The next thing we're hearing that oh, it's owned by the Navy and it's for military reasons. And next thing is only ceremonial. Next, so we don't even know what the matter is. But I think what one thing that is clear to me, and from the moment that the news broke out, was that surely it's not possible for Bola Tinubu to have ordered this kind of vessel, on May 29 that he joined and it will be ready. So something must have, this must have been brewing. But of course, we've never seen a budget where this showed up. So it must have been that this was in the works for a while, but this guy was ready to make it happen and therefore promised the Navy, who probably had been working on it, that the money will come out. And that's why I wasn't surprised when the Navy came out and said, oh, it had been ordered, but we didn't pay for it. And the question then became, I don't understand. How did you go to a shipmaker and tell them that, oh, you want them to make this kind of vessel for you? and they would not, and they will make it without you paying anything, or not making a down payment. So that's another drama that we need to get to the bottom of. I think the other issue was also that, I mean, as far as I know, I've never seen a $5 million yacht before. So it remains to be seen. I would really like to see the picture of this thing that they're talking about, because it doesn't seem to be in the price class of those types of vessels. But it just having it, and I know we're going to talk about the whole supplementary budget thing, but having it at this point in time, it just speaks to everything that I said, and a lot of people said, was the reason why a Tinubu presidency made no sense. Because Nigeria has gone through, an 8-year disaster with somebody who promised who basically swindled a certain of the populace into thinking that he was coming with integrity and frugality, and turned out to be a rank Kadede president, there for the pomp and pageantry, as my friend Michael usually says. And it was just obvious that Tinubu was going to continue in the same vein. And so we see a supplement, his very first, attempt to formalize spending. And you see this kind of thing pop out, and it tells you all you need to know about what's going to happen over the next 4 years.
Well, thank you, Phoenix. Yeah, we need to address these issues one by one because I'm a bit confused. So, first of all, thank you for clarifying. So, it's a yacht, it's not a yacht or whatever it is people are calling it. So, this so-called yacht, is it? Because I remember when I was, funny enough, when I was young, just before I left Nigeria for A levels at university, we had this Malam outside the house. He used to sell sweets and all that kind of stuff. So you'd buy, they called it, you buy it on credit. So he'd give it to you and then you pay maybe later. And I remember I still hadn't paid him for some Tom Tom sweets and a few other things I collected.
I hope he's listening, so he'll come after
Yeah. No, my mother helped me clear the debt a few months later. But I'm thinking, is it normal to buy a boat on credit? Is it even legal? So, because from what I gather, there was a debate about what this vessel was. Some said it was a presidential yacht. Others said no, it's non-presidential. Somebody said it's for training. Somebody said no, it's for combat. But whilst all these debates were going on as to what this boat was, Ali Ndume, the senator, came forward and said, actually, the boat has already arrived and the Navy is already in possession of it. And I'm trying to understand what is the usual process, Phoenix? Is this how it happens that Navy just collects a boat from somewhere on credit, and then it's for Nigeria and the legislature to work out how to pay for it. Is that how it's done?
I've never seen it done that way. Never. I mean, this is a seriously capital intensive thing. I mean, you're talking about at current FX rates, you're talking give or take $5 million. Who's going to go ahead and commit to delivering something worth $5 million? And again, I'm saying I mean, I stand to be corrected, unless this is a boat and not a yacht. A $5 million price tag seems low to me, and maybe it's a final payment that they've been paying over time. But even if it's $5 million, nobody is committing to a $5 million venture that you are going to, oh, you know what, start the work, I'll pay you later. Especially for a country that people know that, yes, you are struggling for money. So unless it was part of a package deal, maybe there were other Navy vessels that were included in the deal, and this was thrown in as part of it. And of course, they've paid for other things. They're going to pay for it later. I just don't see how a singular purchase of this kind of value would simply be, you know what, let's start the work, and when you deliver it after that, we'll now put it in our budget and let you know when we can pay you. That's some serious trust. And I just do I mean I find it very hard to believe that any reputable bookmaker would accept those terms.
I just wanted to check, Phoenix. Has anybody actually seen this mysterious yacht, boat, vessel, yacht? Because everybody seems to be talking about it, but nobody has a photo or seen a picture. So various camps in the presidency even appear to be speculating as to what this thing can do or cannot do. So wouldn't it be normal for maybe the senators or the House to say, okay, let us actually see this instrument or this arc that everybody's arguing about? Would that not be the normal thing to request?
Of course, it would be the normal thing to request, especially as you mentioned Ndume, for example, especially as we've been told that the thing has already arrived in Nigeria. So clearly, someone must be showing us pictures, or we must see, what exactly it looks like. So, we're waiting to see images, and like you said, the House of Reps, of course, pulled back the funding and pushed it into education, or is it student loans, if I remember correctly. But yeah, it's part of their oversight function. They should have asked to see it. Now, of course, it leaves the Navy in a quandary. And not just the Navy. The executive, the presidency, to explain how they're putting something in the budget that has already been delivered. So they need to explain that, because you should not spend money before it has been appropriated. But if this vessel has already been delivered, that means you spend the money already. You already committed the country to spending the money. So, it's just a mess. And anyways, let's see what they show us at some point in time. Somebody clearly has to show us what this thing looks like.
Yes, this thing had better not be a canoe, a small boat. Calling an armored vessel. But anyway, because one of the funniest commentary I saw, somebody said the boat is actually going to be used by Tinubu's son and one of his friends, somebody called Legge Miami. And I'm thinking, who is Legge Miami, and why are they going to be on this boat? Do you know this Legge Miami?
I don't know who they are. But I also saw, Nigerians, they always bring humor into everything. So I saw some of that, saying that they're sure that this thing will show up in the south of France very soon with some serious boat parties and all of that. So, Michael, if you're looking to enjoy some Mediterranean fare, so maybe sign up.
Yes, I like to get on this yacht. Is it turning? If you're listening, there's space on the yacht. Let me guess up. But anyway, the other question I was going to ask is, they also seem to have made provision for example, $3 billion for renovating the vice president's official quarters in Lagos, $2.5 billion for renovating Aguda House, which is his official residence in Abuja, $2.9 billion for SUVs, another $2.9 billion for replacement of pool vehicles, $1.5 billion for the purchase of official vehicles for the first lady, then apparently $4 billion for the construction of an office complex in the state house. So then $1.5 billion and $200 million for the computerization and digitization of state house. And a number of Nigerians have said, we're talking of a financial crisis here, where fuel subsidy is gradually being removed, the cost of living is going up. Are these expenses justified in your view, Phoenix?
No expenses justified, Michael. And again, back to my earlier comments around, what can be expected from a Tinubu presidency. This is not a surprise to me, because, I expected a Tinubu administration to be profligate, and jumping out this way, it does not surprise me at all. All of those expenses are not. When you think about, let's put it in context. Buhari signed a 22 trillion naira budget, so that's the plan for 2023, that we're going to spend 22 trillion naira. Of that 22 trillion naira, about 12 trillion was a deficit. That means that Nigeria was only planning to make 10 trillion naira and would need to borrow 12 trillion naira to be able to spend the 22 trillion that we're looking to spend. That's crazy. So for a new government to then come in and say, look, we know we already had a 22 trillion naira, let's add another 2 trillion, let's add another 10% on top of it. So we make it a nice round figure, 24 trillion naira, we'll be spending 2 trillion naira every month. To put it in further context, the last budget that Jonathan left before he left was 4.5 trillion naira. So basically, the amount that we were supposed to spend in 2015, based on the spending this for this year, we're going to spend that amount in 2 months out of the 12 months of the year, because on an average of 2 trillion naira a month, within two and a half months, you will have spent within 2.5 months, you'll have spent 5 trillion. That is the level of profligate spending that we came to see under Buhari, because you can't point to anything that 20 trillion is going to deliver. And you see the continued hardship, you see the poor infrastructure and all of those kinds of things. Then Tinubu jumps in and wants to push to 2 trillion naira and pads it with all this nonsense, cars for my wife, fixing of residents. All of those things could have waited. You know, we've said that this country needs to dial back on its spending. Number one, you are not making enough money to buy you time to ramp up revenue, because it's imperative that Nigeria must find a way to increase revenue. You cannot continue having a federal government that only makes, they plan to make 10 trillion. We know that the OPI make maybe 60, 70% of that if they're lucky. So you're saying that you cannot continue planning to, make a certain amount of money and then spending three times the amount of money you can reasonably expect to make. You have to ramp up your revenue, but it will take time because there are structural issues that exist that don't allow you to do that. So in that time, what you need to do is then rein in spending, because you cannot keep on ramping up, debt. That's what Buhari did, aided by the central bank, and then we ended up having to, securitize about 24 trillion naira of debt to the central bank. Now, this guy comes in, and you're not seeing any difference, because a lot of the spending makes no sense. Yes, there's 400 billion to give to, they say they want to give to people, there's money that they want to use to increase salaries, but then they push in their own stuff as well, and then you're like, can't you even send a message? If you send a message, holding back all of these things that come directly to you and focus on, the bare minimum, the most critical spending. Yes, we must have social intervention programs. I've been talking about that for the last 6 months, that from the moment you said subsidy was gone, you should have had a program in place to cushion that. You're finally talking about it now. So yes, that is good. But then when we see the other nonsense that is inside the budget, you know that these guys are not, they're not going to be different. In fact, they may be worse, which was the call that I made way before elections to say, you don't go for this type of people. So, it's what it is right now. Again, we're looking at the MTF, and then we're looking forward to the 2024 budget. But morning shows the day, as our people say, and you can already see the kind of thinking and the kind of spending that is going to be coming here.
Yes, and then one of the public commentators on social media, I think her name is Renu, also made an interesting point, which is the fact that this supplementary budget makes no provision for healthcare.
Exactly.
Despite the fact that healthcare is one of the neglected sectors in our country. So are you also concerned?
Of course I'm concerned. Of course I'm concerned. I mean, how do you plan to spend, you're looking at areas of spending and there's no healthcare. And we know the state of healthcare in the country. There's no attempt to solve for existing problems. Rather, there are things that, I mean, so of, I'm really happy that Nigerians are calling that out, that they are, paying attention enough to see where this supplementary budget has significant gaps, and speaking to that, it makes, I mean, no sense. How do you deal with social issues when you don't fund healthcare? Anyways, there's really nothing more to add to what Renu said. She was spot on.
And then the final question on this supplementary budget before we move to the next topic is a number of people, even I myself, have raised the fact that this budget seems to have been passed very quickly. Is this normal? Shouldn't there did you expect there to be more review from the members of the House as well as the Senate to ask questions, or is this the usual speed by which these types of budgets are approved?
No, it's not the usual speed, and I do not have any expectations of an Akpabio-led Senate. This is what Nigerians should come to expect. I mean, when you hand over your country to brigands and charlatans, this is what you should expect. This is, I mean, they will. We used to call what's his name, the Lawan-led Senate rubber stamp. These guys are going to take you to another level. I mean, they're just going to, do whatever, because of course, are they not also getting their sweeteners? Have we not been talking about the fact that they are getting SUVs and all of these benefits in the midst of all the suffering that Nigerians are going through? We're seeing food inflation cross 30%. We're seeing, I mean, the naira devalued significantly and creating hardship for people. Trade is down. Customs, the revenue that customs has generated in the first half of this year, no, even up, I think in the last budget report that I saw, even in the MTF between January and July, is about 60% or 66% or thereabouts. So trade is struggling, businesses are struggling. People are not getting jobs. I mean, people are, I mean, struggling to have basic needs. But you see, National Assembly folks, enjoying the largesse, along with the executive. So what is to be expected that they will ask questions or push things back? One is even surprised that the House of Reps, even showed some initiative pushing back on this yacht business and saying and moving the money to student loans, as they said they will do. But the whole political class is in a mess, and this particular administration, between the and we were just talking about the judiciary, right? It just seems like the whole leadership class of Nigeria has gotten to a place where it is a cesspit of corruption, of lack of care, of lack of, they just don't. I mean, like we say, they don't send. They believe that I mean, they've reached the height of impunity where they are doing things knowing fully well that Nigerians will not do anything about it.
Thank you, Phoenix. So, well, we've heard from Phoenix, the English master. It is a yacht. So please let's stick to that. Let's call it a yacht and not what we've been calling it previously. And yes, so on to our second topic, which is the rumble in Port Harcourt, Nyesomuike v. Sim Fubara. So Phoenix, what is going on? Wike is supposed to be governor of the Federal Capital Territory. So why is he in the middle of a royal rumble in Port Harcourt? Or is Port Harcourt now part of Abuja? Or what is happening, Phoenix?
It's interesting that you called him governor of Federal Capital Territory. I actually like that, because that's the next step that we need to push, since the Supreme Court has decided that Abuja should be treated as a state in all ramifications. We need to make sure that we start. I mean, that's the first step. First, we say that Wike is governor. Next step is to push for elections into the governorship of the Federal Capital Territory. But I digress. I mean, last I knew, the River State is a standalone state and not a part of the Federal Capital Territory. But as Nigerian governors I want to do, they want to move on to other things but have their stooge in place. And I make no mistake about it. Everyone was clear that, I mean, Sim Fubara was set up to be Wike's stooge and to be the third term of Wike's governorship. But it is interesting, and it is good for our democracy that Sim Fubara very early on decided that he's going to push back against his puppet master. And that's what we're seeing in all of the drama that we're on, that is on now. And for me, it's been interesting seeing it. And like I said, I think it's a good deed. That's not to say that I think Sim offers anything better than Wike does, or he's a good chap. No. But this idea of godfatherism and everything, you know, once in a while you want to see people push back, then start their own decadence, and then somebody else comes push. You know, we need to mock it up. As long as he doesn't claim any innocent lives, that's where I draw the line, and that's where, you know, these people should be called out, because we all know that River State is a state full of political characters who do not hold back when it comes to violence and bloodletting. So that is unacceptable, and that must be, you know, must be addressed. But we've seen it across our 24-year democracy. It reminds me of the Uba and Ngige saga, and it's interesting. I mean, especially when one started seeing policemen, you know, shooting armored, sorry, water cannons at a sitting governor. It was quite interesting. But yeah, I mean, wait to see how it goes now. As Nigerians like to do, we see them now making different comments. We see Fubara telling us that it's a father and son matter. It's still going to be interesting for some time to come.
Thank you, Phoenix. Because I was going to query on that point. So Fubara says it's a father and son issue. But according to news reports, the venue or the legislature in River State was burned to the ground by or because of this protest. So is this truly a father-son issue, or shouldn't the taxpayers be reimbursed by somebody, because he must have cost billions to build these buildings in the first place, isn't it, Phoenix?
Absolutely, absolutely. The taxpayers deserve to know who did that. And not only should they be reimbursed, the person should, I mean, this is arson we're talking about. So people should pay for it by facing the, I mean, the law and having their day in court. I mean, this is, well, he can call it a father-son issue all he likes. We all know how our traditional societies behave. But this goes beyond two men when you start to put the whole state in jeopardy, and that, you know, means that there needs to be a mechanism for the people of River State to be able to call their leaders to order when things like this happen. I mean, of course, we've seen Tinubu supposedly weighed in, and it seemed like there's sort of like a detente right now. And of course, it creates an interesting perspective, which was always going to happen, because you have a state which has traditionally been a PDP state. You have a Wike who was a PDP governor who decided to act against his party to help Tinubu become president. But of course, he handed over to a PDP governor who helped make put in office. Wike has now gone on to sit in an APC-led government as a minister. So there is that interesting dynamic in the sense that you then see the PDP guys who are not able to, you know, call to order these two parties, particularly Wike, because clearly he's outside but still inside. And Fubara is trying to balance the fact that I mean, he's pushing back against Wike, but, you know, wants to take ownership of the structure in River State. And you don't have a PDP party that is strong enough or has a coherent structure to be able to, you know, bring things to order. PDP lost its its strength in this last election with a series of gaffes that has now put them in a place where such a key state as Rivers, they may end up losing it. Because if Tinubu manages to wade into this matter and makes a deal between both Wike and Fubara, and at some point they both cross over to the APC, that's the beginning of the end for PDP in that state, and may also be the beginning of the end in South-South as a whole, given the economic strength of River State. So there's a lot of ways to look at this. First, primarily from the eyes of the citizens of River State and what they should want from their government, and pushing back against this nonsense that is going on. But then also from the different political actors jostling, you know, with their own interests in mind, and how the biggest loser in all of this, to my mind, I wait to see how it plays out, could very well be the PDP. We already saw how they've reacted, hailing Tinubu and all of those kind of things. That would never have happened in the past.
Thank you, Phoenix. But Wike himself, he really gave an interview shortly after this incident saying the problem was they want to take my structure away. And could you explain to the listeners, what is this structure? And what is he exactly saying that they're trying to take away from him that he's fighting for? Because as far as the listeners are aware, he was governor, he's left office, and he's now the minister or the governor of the Federal Capital Territory. So what is this structure business, Phoenix?
Structure is simply political power base. It's political office holders use part of their loot to feed political actors within their area of influence, to buy loyalty, to keep people on side so that, you know, elections go their way, so that they are able to wield influence. And because influence is also traded, right? So if you look back to the 2023 elections, Wike, as governor of River State, had built a strong structure of people who were loyal to him as long as he was feeding them and making them, you know, bringing them into the sun along with him. And that enabled him to deliver River State to Tinubu using all means necessary. That's the kind. If you take that away from him, he becomes a toothless individual who simply is in politics but has no power base. And once he loses that, the threat to him is that he becomes less important to Tinubu, because it is a tenuous relationship. You are only as good as what you can bring to the table. So I'm not surprised that the man will be fighting tooth and nail to retain his structure. Think back to Wike's predecessor, Amaechi, who was governor before him and also had the same trappings of power and blah, blah, blah. And even challenged the sitting president at that point in time, who. And then Amaechi goes into becoming a minister. Wike comes, takes over everything, and all of a sudden Amaechi loses a say in River State, and we know that, you know, he lost his influence. So while he was still useful at the center, he was no longer that all-powerful character or that guy who could get things done in his state. It's the same. That's the reason, because Wike has seen that. He saw what he was able to do to Amaechi. He's worried that this could happen to him, and then he loses his relevance, and that takes him out of the political game. So when you ask me what the structure means, it just means that, you know, having built a political base, but the way they do it is by, you know, funding the machinery, is by making sure that, you know, people are benefiting from you, and therefore that loyalty is acquired and remains available for you to put into action whenever you need to.
Thank you, Phoenix. And then with Wike, what is his plan? Is it to stay in the PDP or to go to the APC?
I think the guy is just a confused character. I think, I mean, How does he go back to the PDP, and to what PDP does he go back to? It will take a lot for him to be able to retrace his steps. But the challenge for him is having, I mean, and he has come this far. Maybe he will just take the further step. The challenge for him, and again, why his structure is important, is if he then decides to go into the APC, what does he go in as? What does he can't go alone without a structure, do you get? Because then he will be too far away in the pecking order. While in the PDP, he was powerful enough to almost win the presidential ticket. He was that influential. So what he's struggling with now is how he retains his River State structure so that at least he can have a strong bargaining chip if he's going to cross over to the APC, or that it gives him a launching pad, to still come back in the PDP. Like I said before, Rivers has always been very important. And given what has happened to the PDP in the Southeast, losing Rivers would be a big issue for them. So if Rike is still in control, maybe that may be a good bargaining chip. But as far as I'm concerned, he's a confused character. He has played his cards wrongly, in my estimation. I think the way the 2023 elections went and the damage that he did to PDP also damaged his own electoral value. And I mean, so now I just feel like he's just holding on for relevance. Where does he go from here?
Well, thank you, Phoenix. And that's the, you briefly touched on it, but this is the other issue that needs discussing is the role of Atiku, because there appears to be a battle within the PDP between a former governor and a current governor. Yet the dispute was settled by the current president, who's an APC member. And if you remember last week on the podcast, when Bola Tinubu was announced as the winner by the Supreme Court, a governor of a PDP governor of Bayelsa was also in Aso Rock with Bola Tinubu celebrating. So what does this mean for Atiku, the fact that it is Bola Tinubu resolving issues in his party when he's also there?
No, it just brings to light what Atiku lost, what he gave up. He could have been that elder statesman that kept that party together and pointed in the right direction. If he had chosen to anoint somebody else for the 2023 election, particularly someone from the southern part of Nigeria, particularly someone from the southeast, as everyone was talking about equity, 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 this one zone, which has always been a mainstay of the PDP, enable them to also be part of the table to bring everybody together. If he had done that, he would to potentially PDP would have won the election, and he would have now be, the elder statesman, the guy who brought PDP back to power and who would have influence, and all of these shenanigans that we're seeing, probably would still, maybe Ewike would still have done what he had done, because of course, once he didn't get the ticket, he might have still decided to throw in with Tinubu. But a stronger, more coherent PDP, which would have followed equity, would have been able to withstand that fight and maybe, hold back against the things that have happened. Atiku lost that opportunity by trying to become president himself. At some point, you need to accept that your time is past and become a kingmaker and become an elder statesman. But he refused to do that, and you can trace the downfall of this party to him. As far as I'm concerned, that's he needs to take ownership for a lot of that. And now, not being the one that people can turn to, not being the one who can keep the party together, not being the one who can mediate or broker these things, makes his position even more tenuous. At least, in the southern part of Nigeria, from a PDP perspective, and that continues to make it an issue for the party itself.
Thank you, Phoenix. And then for the party in broader terms, Are they still a viable opposition party? Because half of the world, it seems like one half of their prominent members are either have either taken appointments with Bola Tinubu or seem to be in cahoots with him, and the other half don't seem to have any leadership. And they're not really with Atiku, but they've not taken a stand either way. So is there actually an opposition to Bola Tinubu as currently?
I think we have what we call a splintered opposition, and from a political party, political structure perspective, there is an opposition which we clearly see every day. I mean, basically, we're seeing young Nigerians become more politically active and are choosing to say that this whole electoral process has been a sham, and they are going to hold this government accountable, even if they're not able to push through the political process in this particular time. And you can be rest assured that I mean, and I'm sure we'll talk about it in our next topic, that people will be waiting when 2027 come around. They will organize themselves, they will become more structured, but it won't be exactly what we saw in the 2023 election cycle, where a different force came together. That's what's going to be the opposition. It's not going to be, oh, APC versus PDP anymore, but you're going to see different political forces. And what will be interesting to see is how they coalesce towards 2027, if there's going to be true change.
Thank you, Phoenix. It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. But my final topic on this Wike v. Fubara, do you think this is just a temporary ceasefire, or do you think a settlement has been achieved so that we're not expecting any more fireworks in River State?
It's a temporary ceasefire. I mean, River State is not, I mean, somebody has to win. When you fight battles like this, somebody has to win. Fubara has clearly shown that he wants to be his own man. He wants to be governor, and he wants to be able to run things. There's no way Wike is going to accept that. And I don't see any deal that will make that happen, So there has, it can only be a temporary ceasefire, and then we'll see how things evolve.
Thank you, Phoenix. Well, time will tell. But onto our final topic, the FBI, the Federal Bureau of Investigations in the US, has begun their release of documents relating to Bola Tinubu's time in the United States, or any documents they have concerning him. But I understand that, correct me if I'm wrong, Phoenix, but they have slightly redacted the documents, so any reference to Bola Tinubu has been blacked out. So the first question, could you explain to us why have they released the documents and then redacted his name? And then what's the point if they're going to redact his name from the documents, Phoenix?
I mean, there are several reasons why redaction occurs. Based on the little knowledge I know of US law enforcement, in certain cases, they do that to protect individuals who are central to maybe a case that they've been making. Maybe they've had informants, or somebody who has cut a deal, and they've made, so they are going to release documents, but they will redact information that can be detrimental to something else that they would rather protect. So if they believe that releasing a document with Tinubu's name, if it is Tinubu's name that has been redacted, in a certain context, creates an issue for them, whether legally, maybe there's a legal agreement that was made that they would not release any such information on him, but they have to answer an FOI, or it is something pertinent to, it might even be pertinent to a live situation. Now, for me, one of the things that became clear is we also have to think through the process of what has happened. Somebody raised a freedom of information request to the FBI and said, I want to see documents that have this person's name or anything pertaining to this person. The documents that the FBI has released, even reading through them and the information that is not redacted, you know, creates such a significant black mark, because all the documents, you know, speak to crime, speak to drug-related crime. And so it's, you know, it's like me writing to FBI and saying, please give me any information you have on Mike, and they send me information that he's talking about. That in loan, for me, whether you redact or you don't redact, is already damning. The fact that they can send a request to the FBI and they'll bring information on you to that extent is already damning. Because, I mean, it was your name that was put out. They didn't put the names of the other people. They just put your name. And it is bringing out all of that information. So, I mean, we see FBI, of course, doing what they're doing, which is what you typically see law enforcement agents do. But the fact that they responded with those documents, with the text, already tells a lot of people what they need to know.
Thank you, Phoenix. But do you think these revelations will do more damage to Bola Tinubu's political reputation, or do you think Nigerians have passed that point and it's not really a topic of discussion within the chattering or the political class?
Of course, I think it will do damage and continue to do damage, and that's where Nigerians will learn to play the long game. We typically have very short memories, but in this instance, I think people are now pulling things together towards 2027, when he may attempt to run for a second term. And that's where all of this information that is being collected will be geared towards. I do not think this is something that will go away. There's just too much, you know, when you take into context the CSU deposition, that's already, you know, a thing in place. And if you listen to what the Supreme Court was saying, the Supreme Court basically told us that it was too late to bring it, you know, bring it later. Okay, no problem. People have packed that to one side. FBI is now releasing information. People will bring that as well. So the question will then be how all of this is put together and, you know, hammered on over the 4 years of his presidency, making it a very difficult presidency for him. Because let's not forget, you're chipping away at the legitimacy of his presidency. You're going to have, and not only within Nigeria, but internationally. And so what will happen is that, yes, while he will continue to represent Nigeria, there will be certain things that will be beyond him. There will be, I can imagine, for example, over the next 12 months, it will be interesting if the FBI continues to release information and all of this noise continues to happen from Nigerians, both within and without. It will be interesting to see how Biden, going into an election year, you know, deals with the Nigerian government. How much of an interaction will there be? You know, similarly, in other places, you know, the Rishi Sunaks of this world, or all those other, the Macrons of this world, all of them facing certain things in their own countries. So if he becomes almost a pariah, there will be an impact. And so you'll begin to see that over the course of his presidency, because you know that the only way he's going to leave is when he completes his term, because surely this National Assembly is not going to impeach or anything. But by the time you start getting towards the elections, you may see a groundswell of opinion that has been created. I do not see how this simply just goes away or Nigerians will forget about it.
Well, thank you, Phoenix. Well, time will tell if your predictions are correct, but our time is up. So thank you again for taking part in this podcast today. And until same time next week, I say have a fantastic 7 days to our listeners.
Thanks, Michael. And have a great week. Have a great week, everyone. Bye.